Simon Godwin's riotous production of Twelfth Night at the National Theatre features several unusual interpretations of well-known characters, not least, of course, Tamsin Gregg's brilliant Malvolia. There's also a female Feste, Doon McKicken, and Fabian has become Fabia. But gender reversal isn't the only marker of originality here. That louche duo, Toby Belch and Andrew Aguecheek, played by Tim McMullen and Daniel Rigby, while strong on anarchic comedy, are here more than a pale reflection of Falstaff and a dim-wit sidekick. My name's Heather Neal, and I'm joined by Tim McMullen to talk to Theatre Voice about playing the high-living scrounger Toby. Well, Tim's an actor experienced in film and television as well as stage work, which includes numerous previous appearances at the National. In Man and Superman, his Dark Materials, Racing Demon, Coram Boy, The Wind in the Willows, amongst many others. And he's worked with Complicité and at Shakespeare's Globe, where he played Jaques in As You Like It in 2009 and Prospero at the Sam Wanamaker Playhouse last year. Well, thank you, Tim, for joining us to talk to Theatre Voice, because I know you're in the middle of rehearsals for a new play called Common. It's by D.C. Moore, and that's about all I know about it, so maybe we'll come on to that as well. But anyway, this Twelfth Night looks like a lot of fun, as much fun as it looks.
It is, actually. It's a really nice company. I think we're always so pleased to see each other, every day. We're not performing it now, but we did nearly 6 weeks, a 6 week stretch.
And it's coming back in.
It's coming back in briefly, unfortunately, only briefly. It's a very happy, very, very, very happy company. Mm. So it's like coming to a party every night. it really is a good party.
Well, what was the preparation like? I mean, you might perhaps have been a little bit surprised to be asked to play Sir Toby. He's not like most people's idea of Sir Toby.
I know. And I was actually, I can say this because I've talked about this with Simon Godwin. So it's not a secret that I was actually quite reluctant to do it. Not because I don't think it's a great role, but just because I didn't really see myself as Sir Toby. My image of it was a sort of sub Falstaffian figure, and I thought, I don't want to pad up. In fact, I did try padding up in one rehearsal, and I just knew that wasn't going to go anywhere. And every time I told people, when I did accept to do it, people said, who are you playing? And not expecting me to say Toby Belch, and they look at me and they look, because I'm quite slim, and they look at my stomach and go, really? You?
Yeah, so, unusual after Prospero.
Yeah, and are you going to pad up? And I said, So that was one thing. And the other thing was also, I don't want to disrespect anyone else, but the productions I've seen of Twelfth Night, I've never really remembered Toby Belch very clearly. I didn't. There've been one or two notable productions where he's been, terrifically good. David Troughton, I think, apparently was wonderful at Donmar, but I didn't see that. But usually, I just found him sort of a rather forgettable character, and not very funny. So it wasn't really, so I was a bit reluctant to play it. But the thing is, it's a very big part. I haven't counted the lines, but I've been told by more than one person it's the biggest part in the play. And certainly I was told, he's the engine of the play. And that I can well believe, because having performed it now multiple times, it's tiring and you're on stage a lot. And you're constantly driving the action
and moving
around.
Physical.
And I just sort of think, well, if the part is really this big, why is he tolerated in the household, and why do people actually seem to like him so much, and why does he end up getting married to Maria? There must be a reason. He can't just be a fat old man who's past it.
He's her uncle, Olivia's uncle.
He's got to be fun, He must be fun. Yeah. He must be good value, in spite of being, this terrible person.
Because she keeps forgiving him.
She keeps forgiving him, and he does awful things. So there's got to be an element of him that's quite attractive.
Did you talk about why he was there? I mean, you know, had he turned up for the funeral and not gone home of her, the funeral of her brother?
Yes, well, we all invented elaborate biographies.
Yeah.
And mine was, you know, that I'd, because it's not period, so we could sort of set it in, yeah, you know, relatively contemporary time. So I sort of talked about all my failure that I'd done. You know, I'd been a kind of vacuum cleaner salesman. I'd been in a rock band for a while. I think one of the things I did was sexing one day old chickens, which was a job an uncle of mine had. He also went through a lot of different jobs and, you know, failed marriage. I got children somewhere that didn't see me any longer. And I was an alcoholic, you know. So after the death of my sister, who was Olivia's mother, I'd come to the funeral, and that'd been sort of quite a long time ago. I can't remember when we said something like 15 years ago or something.
Yeah. She's more recently lost her father
and her
brother.
Yeah. I'd come to stay and had somehow just sort of ended up by staying.
Yeah.
And, you know, always been in scrapes and in the family, you know, and I was kind of looked after as well as tolerated because I was loved, you know, as a member of the family, and I was good value much of the time, even you know, so every now and then I had to be bailed out, you know, from local police station or whatever. But anyway, so that's how I ended up by staying such a long time. But I think you've got the feeling that things have been getting much worse,
yes,
recently. And I think the death of my brother-in-law and my nephew obviously sort of kicked him down the road a little bit further.
So the money's getting a bit tight now.
Yeah, I don't think he's got any money.
No.
I mean, I think he relies on these kind of confidence things,
yeah,
like, you know, with Andrew Agee, you know, he's clearly skinny.
Yeah, so he presumably is a much more recent arrival.
Yes,
he's,
yes,
brought him in to try to woo,
yes,
Olivia.
Yeah.
And therefore get him into the family as well.
Yes.
And get hold of some of her fortune.
Yes, and I don't think that Toby Welch realistically really thinks that Olivia is going to marry Andrew Agee. But I think if he can convince Andrew Agee that it's a possibility, then he can keep
milking him yeah,
for as long as he can.
Yes. Well, in this production, there are quite a few suggestions of homoerotic relationships, and some quite explicit. Antonio, obviously, absolutely,
yeah,
besotted with Sebastian. But is Sir Andrew in love with you?
Well, that's a question you'd have to ask him, really.
Mm.
I think, yes, I think he probably
he's a bit
is
ambivalent.
A bit.
About.
Yes, I think he is. He keeps trying to come in for a cuddle, you,
yes,
know, every now and then, particularly when he's drunk. yes, but I mean, I think so, but I don't think that doesn't, to be perfectly honest, that's just something that Toby sort of brushes off and kind of goes, really? Oh, you know, come on.
Yeah. Well, then this marriage to Maria, she's called in this production, I'm used to her being Mariah. Was there a discussion about that? Was that just seems more natural for it to be Maria in modern times?
Oh, what about the pronunciation,
yes,
of,
yeah,
the name? If there was a discussion, I wasn't part of it, and I certainly didn't express an opinion.
But it's interesting that she marries him or he marries her, because, of course, it's status for her, isn't it? She's
yeah,
a waiting woman.
Well, I mean, I think
she's marrying,
you know,
the aristocracy.
I think you know, she's very attractive, and Toby, he kind of, I think he sort of instinctively knows he needs someone to stabilize him. And we played it so there's a big spark between them right from the beginning, and even when he's sort of trying to tell Andrew Agee to get off with her, he's also looking at Maria and going, look what I'm doing. But I don't think there's anything going on between them at that point. But in the scene where Malvolia comes down and breaks up the party, which we call the rave scene, because that's eventually sort of
certainly
what it
very
does.
Loud in this production.
Yeah.
It is a rave.
Malvolia comes and pulls the back of Maria's hair, pulls her over and says, you know, by this hand, you know, I'll
yeah,
make sure
quite
that
vicious.
She's quite vicious, and I find it really upsets me. Because I feel so attracted towards Maria and so fond of her. And that's a kind of catalyst moment. And it's interesting at the end of the garden scene, the gulling scene where Malvolio picks up the letter, Toby says, "I could marry the wench for this device and ask for no other dowry with her but such another jest." And there's so many moments in the play where either Toby or someone else says something that then subsequently happens. So when he says it, it's not, I don't think it's an idle, you know, it's not, I don't think it's a rhetorical gesture. I think he really likes her. And I think she really likes him.
And of course she's dressing his wounds and things as well, isn't she,
yeah,
by the end? She's she's someone he can rely on.
Whether or not there's any future in it, for certainly for her, I don't know, but that's another play.
He does have a cruel streak as well, doesn't
oh,
he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But so does she.
Mm.
You know, they're...
Their treatment of Malvolio is very, very cruel.
And in fact, the way we play it, Maria is the one that wants to go further than Toby.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're, I mean, I think that you could imagine them as being a company, that a couple that certainly enable each other's addictions and... you know, in the future.
And the brushing,
yes, no,
brushing
they really like each other. They really like each other.
The brushing off of Sir Andrew at the end. I mean, there he is, sadly.
Yeah, but see, that's another thing, you know, right at the beginning, before we even see Sir Andrew, Toby's so disrespectful of him, the way he talks about him.
Yes.
And then he says, "Oh, look, Castigliano Vargo, here comes Sir Andrew, ache you face."
Yeah.
Like,
you know, yes, he's using him. It's very obvious from the beginning.
And he turns on a sixpence, and AGG comes and says, "Oh, sweet Sir Andrew, you know, how nice to see you." Yeah. And then makes an idiot of him by trying to get him to chat up Maria, which is kind of Mariah.
just setting him up.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very good. So the two of them are in it already with. Sir Andrew being the first butt. But, I mean, obviously when it was written, Puritanism was something much more of a force than it is now. But did you talk about that at all, about what Malvolio stood for?
We did a little bit. I mean, obviously in Shakespeare's day, you know, Puritan was, you know, someone presumably wanted to close... didn't approve of plays.
Yes, yes.
I don't know whether that had taken hold yet. But certainly a threat, you know, and any kind of easygoing, self-respecting theatre goer wouldn't have rubbed shoulders easily with the Puritan lot. So Malvolio, as a you know, traditionally played as a target for ridicule, I don't think they would have felt too sorry for him.
No.
But the gender reversal, I think, increases the jeopardy so much for Malvolio. Not only is she going to be revealed as being a fool for making an unwise declaration of love, but she's also going to have to come out, you know, and declare her sexuality, which has been hidden. So it's a double jeopardy, and the fall is really painful, and I think the audience find it very difficult quite a lot of the time.
Yes, and part of that is that we are told that we're complicit in this. We too have laughed when she says she's going to be
revenge on the whole pack of her. Yeah.
And she includes the audience.
Yeah.
But the whole production actually has a lot of it acknowledges the audience quite a lot, doesn't it? I mean, you do as Sir Toby.
But just going back to the puritanical thing,
sorry,
is that I think rather than the puritanical thing in, you know, in the traditional sense of, you know, 17th century Puritanism or anything like that, I think she's just got a mean, vicious streak. And nobody likes her. You know, she's just spoiling everybody's fun, and she's sort of very much divide and rule. As Olivia's stewardess or steward, when you have to put it. So it's sort of Puritan in that respect, but not
not in a religious sort of
not sense. In a religious sort of way.
But she whips off that awful wig at the end, revealing, I don't know if that even that's her real hair, meant to be her own hair or another.
I think it is. It's supposed to be her.
Yeah, yeah. So, so it's quite a different person underneath. But, yes. But anyway, the audience thing, I mean, has it... have you involved the audience more and more as the production has gone on?
Yes, yes, I think so. I mean, I think that's an inevitable thing, is that you, as you get easier and more relaxed in your performance...
Yeah. Do you always knock over the shrine? And I've seen it.
Yeah.
Her shrine.
Oh, well, I always fall backwards. I mean, it's usually because I can't see where I'm going. I kind of sometimes...
the shrine to her brother, I mean.
The shrine to her brother. Well, you see that, I mean, at the beginning, that was... I mean, one of the things that you want to do, I always feel that I want to do very early on in performance, is you want the audience to kind of get a handle on who you are.
Yeah.
And so my first line being, what a plague means my niece to take the death of her brother thus, is a kind of challenge, because you really want the audience not to kind of go, what's he talking about? What does that mean? And I tried various things. I tried sort of falling over in the dark with a cigarette, you know, coming in late at night, not being able to find the light switch, and knocking over the shrine, and standing up and going, oh, what a, you know, plague means, you know. And that didn't really quite work in the early performances, or it sort of worked a bit, but the audience couldn't really quite see what was going on. So I thought about it quite a lot, and I thought, okay, well, if I can sit on the edge of the sort of little altar thing and tap, or, you know, pat the urn with his ashes in,
yes, it's very cool.
As I say, the death of her brother, the audience go, oh, I see. It's the death of her brother's in that.
Yeah.
So they immediately kind of understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, I lift the top off the urn and use it as use the urn as an ashtray. And so the audience then they've got the double thing of going, oh, and I see what sort of character you are.
Yes.
And that's awful, but I think I'm going to quite enjoy watching what you do next. Hopefully, touch wood.
Yes.
So the shrine was actually sort of my idea as a way of kind of...
But the other night, afternoon, it crashed over completely and you picked up the cross and said, oh, made in Illyria.
Oh, right, yeah. Oh, well, that's...
You're doing a bit of ad-libbing.
That's a bit of... Yeah, that hadn't happened before.
Uh-huh.
I hadn't done that before. Yes, there's a bit of ad-libbing has started to creep in when things happen. But I think, you know, I think the audience, you know, you want, in a play like this, you want the audience to feel involved, and you want them to feel implicated in what's happening and feel close to the performances. I think that's a very important thing. And it's certainly, I'm sure, what would have occurred, you know, back in 15...
And of course, it's a very big theatre to make people feel involved in.
I know, yeah, it's a huge space.
Yeah.
But I'm just in fact, just talking about, you know, whatever the original production might have been like and how the audience might have responded, is that one of the things that I tried to think about early on is what sort of actor might Toby Belch have been? And I think that they would have been quite a famous... they're certainly a very good double act. I think they would have been a notable double act, Aguirre, Cheek and Belch. You know, almost like a kind of Laurel and Hardy kind of level of joy and bliss. You know, which explains why Toby Belch has, why they both have so much to do in the play. And also, you know, some of the lines must have been very relevant to those particular actors, which makes them a little bit more difficult to kind of work out how they work, because I think they might have been quite specific. But anyway.
Did you have to change the language at all? Were there a few things that are quite difficult to
I've
get
changed
on.
A little bit, not very much. I've sort of edited one or two little bits with, I mean, Simon made his own cuts, so
yes.
there's some cuts that
the
are
usual sort of thing.
Usual things. But wherever, I mean, the thing is, this is the sort of thing I disapprove of doing instinctively. But then, of course, you know, faced with performing this sort of thing, you know, you actually do. So there's a few words which I've changed. For example, when fest day comes in, the party scene that we talked about, we call the rave scene, and Toby says, "Welcome, ass. Now let's have a catch." And I've changed that to "Let's have a song," because I just don't want the audience to have to think twice. You know, I don't want to think, "What are they going to play? Catch?" Or someone's a good catch, or you know. If you just say "let's have a song," the audience, they don't even need to think about it, and it means the same thing. And he says the word "song" later, so it's not like it's a kind of word that didn't exist. So there's a couple of little things like that, and also a couple of little phrases that I've just removed, just because I don't want the audience to stub their toe on anything. And you know what happens sometimes if you don't follow every line. If there's a line that you get to as an audience member and you don't quite follow it, then you don't hear the next two lines.
Yes.
Because, and I want to be able to take them by the hand, or, you know, well, not take them by the hand, but I want them to be able to hear everything and understand everything. And if there's something difficult that I think I can make work, I'll do everything I can to make it work. But if I think you can't make it work, then I think there's, you know... But so much of it is... You know, fine.
Yes,
so it doesn't matter.
It sounds as if you had quite a lot of freedom within the rehearsal space that you to develop things yourself. I mean, within what Simon had imagined.
Yes. Do what sort of thing
what
do you mean?
Develop? Well, think about changing the.
Oh,
line,
the
joints.
Well, I discussed everything with.
Yeah. Ideas. I mean, the shrine being your idea. For
yes.
Instance. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I think usually in rehearsals, if you come up with an idea that, I mean, particularly if you actually perform it without telling anybody, then,
yeah.
then
and it works.
And it works because sometimes if you explain something, you know, to a director, that you think will be funny, they kind of look at you, going, "Oh no, I don't think that's a good idea." Because the thing is that you know instinctively why it's going to be funny if. You do it because of the kind of actor you are, or you know you can make things work in a particular way. So sometimes it's better just to do it and make them laugh, you know. but obviously any line changes, you know, I would, you know, few though there were. I mean, I would always check them with him and ask him if he minded, and I think he might have suggested some of his own. But you know, talking about Twelfth Night, The Tempest last year, which I was in, Dominic Rowan and Trevor Fox, who were Triculo and Stefano, they changed so much and they had so much contemporary language in. And I sort of imagined that might be a possibility with Toby Belch beforehand. But Simon didn't want that. So we did talk about that. And he wasn't convinced. So that was a discussion that we had, you know, where, you know, he, and quite rightly too, actually, I'm glad that he did take that view, because I don't think it would have worked.
Yeah. Did you talk about your backstory with Sir Andrew? How do you know him? I mean, is he...
Yes, we all read our biographies out
to
each other.
Yeah.
And in fact, they were put up on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone had a chance. And where anything conflicted. So if we had... You know, backstories that were mutually sort of exclusive. So, you know, then we'd get together and we'd find how we could make them work together.
Had you known him from school or the Bullingdon?
No. I think he just arrived. I can't remember exactly. But I think he arrived. I think I met him in the Elephant Club.
Oh,
you know,
I see,
a few months back, and I think he had a job. He was working for the embassy. From home, you know, his dad had fixed him up because he's a bit hopeless, and I think he just got fired or decided to move on, And I'd said, well, look, you know, if you want to get married, I know who you can get married to. Right. You know, my niece, she's absolutely
And you knew she was rich, so.
She's an absolute catch. Yeah. Yeah, oh, yes, no, another round of drinks, that'd be great. Oh, really? Yes, I like that watch. It's really nice, yes. Oh, it looks rather good on. Yeah, thank you. I mean, sort of. So anyway, however that turned out.
Right. Well, you mentioned that ad libs have started creeping in, maybe, but has it changed much generally, the production? Is it?
Well, I think essentially it's the same, but it's deepened and richened. I mean, I think it's a lot of the stuff that I'm not in, particularly towards the end, I think is a lot more moving. I think it always was, but it sort of found it's got deeper and.
Yes, I thought, because I've seen it twice, and I thought that there was more. There was more of an indication of the sadness underneath the play than there had been when I'd first seen it, which I think is quite important.
Yes, it is, yes. And friends of mine that have come to see it, they're much more likely now to say, oh, it was really funny and it was also really sad.
Yes. I love the fact that Olivia is sitting looking completely flummoxed by what's happened to her. She's not just saying, oh, good, I've married the one that looks the same as the one I really
want. Yeah, no, she feels really cheated and betrayed. Yes. She's not sure about it at all.
Right.
There's lots of kind of unconventional choices that I think are very good in this production.
Mm.
But in terms of the bits that I've been in, I'm in changing, I think they're just, we found ways of making it more funny, you know, as you get more relaxed, you get more flexible with the language and, you know, so it can only improve.
Is there a temptation for it to run away, though? That's the director come in and say not too much or
I don't think so.
It didn't appear.
I mean, it can do, you know, I'm not saying it can't with other productions. I think the way it's set up, I think one of the things is that you have to concentrate so hard on keeping the audience with you because of the difficulty of the language, you know.
Yes.
That you've got to keep a rein on it. You know, you've got the fundamental number one thing, you know, particularly the fight scene in the second half where Toby's kind of engineered this fight between Cesario and Aguecheek, is you've got to really keep the audience with you. They have to understand what's happening. Otherwise it won't be funny.
Yeah.
So you can't really sort of let it get out of control. Mm.
We have to mention the amazing set, Sutra Gilmore's extraordinary
God,
set. It is brilliant.
Yeah.
It's sort of a series of pyramid shapes which turn the whole, the revolve, takes you into different, completely different scenarios from one scene to the next. But at least you don't have to come down the stairs in high heels like some people do.
No, I do have this sort of drunken ascent of the staircase at one point. Which is pretty precarious.
Yes, it must feel quite exposed, I should imagine.
Every time she watches.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Begs me not to do it. But no, it's a wonderful set. I adore it. And I think all the costumes, I think the world is where it really works.
Yeah. Now, your costume, I mean, he's actually quite well turned out, isn't he? And not wearing anything silly like Sir Andrew, who looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
But so he's still got quite expensive clothing and fashionable, presumably.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit hipster-ish.
A little hipsterish. Well, actually, I mean, that sort of gives me an opportunity, because it just might be useful to anyone listening to this, if anyone ever does listen to this. About how, you know, the character developed is that I found a photograph of, I was trying to think of who he could be or the kind of person he could be. I found a photograph of Oliver Reed looking very worse for wear.
Yeah.
And I showed this to Simon and I said, well, look, what about that as a starting place? And then I started looking at lots of those sort of 1960s Hellraisers. So I watched lots of YouTube clips of Oliver Reed and Peter O'Toole and Richard Harris and people like that. And that was really, really useful. And I suddenly thought, okay, well, maybe, you know, obviously he's not successful like those people, but he's in a subcategory because that's contemporary. And those people weren't fat. you know, they were, you know, you can be a very effective vodka and slimline alcoholic and not eat very much. And you're fueled by alcohol, which gives you all this energy. And you can be quite well, you know, you can be quite sharply dressed. So that was sort of how that aspect of the character developed. And that was fun to do.
Well, you're now moving on to a new play by D.C. Moore called Common, about which I know nothing. What's your character like in that?
Well, I'm just called Lord.
Posh
again. And I'm the local. I wonder why that could be. I must start looking at to try to dive. I'm not always cast like that, but anyway, the last two plays. And I'm the local aristocrat. I'm the landowner. And the play takes place during the enclosures of the commons in the early 19th century. That's the background of it, anyway. And I'm this local aristocrat with syphilis. And a demented wife, who's killed our son. So I'm kind of grief stricken, and
not a comedy.
Well, it's not unfunny in places. Some of the language is very funny. It's brilliantly written. It's kind of very gothic, you know. I mean, it's really of the period in the sense that sort of there's very melodramatic as well.
So a nice contrast then.
A nice contrast, yeah. It's going to be good. I hope it's going to be very good.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to seeing that anyway. So thank you very much, Tim.
Pleasure.